This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Chief Justice John Roberts arrived in the last hour at the Capitol for the impeachment trial of President Donald Trump.
Senators, I attend the Senate in conformity with your notice for the purpose of joining with you for the trial of the President of the United States.
The Chief Justice took his own oath and then swore in the Senate.
Do you solemnly swear that in all things appertaining to the trial of the impeachment of Donald John Trump, President of the United States, now pending, you will do impartial justice according to the Constitution and laws, so help you God?
It is a moment in the presidency that has happened only twice before in American history. And local constitutional scholar Noah Feldman was part of it. He's a law professor at Harvard. He testified before the House Judiciary Committee hearing in December, and he's on the line with us now. Noah Feldman, welcome back to Radio Boston.
My pleasure.
So, Noah, I want to correct. You testified during the impeachment hearings at the end of last year.
Mm-hmm.
Let's ask, with such a unique perspective on how this process has unfolded, with the impeachment trial formally starting in the Senate today, how do you feel?
I take very seriously the gravity of these events. I think it's always important to remember that even though, you know, we who listen to the radio and read the newspapers and watch television think we know how this trial will probably end, that doesn't mean that the trial isn't serious, isn't important, and that going through the process doesn't have a very crucial role to play in preserving our Constitution. And so I think, you know, the perspective that I have, having been in the middle of that, is to realize that each bit of it matters.
So you actually were one of just a handful of people who will have participated in this moment in history, sort of relatively speaking to all the people in the country. Take us back to your testimony. When did you know you would testify, and how did that feel?
Well, I suppose I didn't know for sure that I would testify till the day it actually happened. You know, I had some brief conversations with staff from the Senate Judiciary, rather from the House Judiciary Committee, who were organizing the hearing. But, you know, they could always have changed their minds, and they could have had a different lineup. So it wasn't until really the moment when I walked into the room that I thought to myself, okay, well, now this is definitively going to happen.
So you were sort of on call until the last minute, basically.
Exactly. They weren't sure who all the participants would be until really the end. We didn't know who the other participants would be, and they could have added or subtracted. All that was within the discretion of the staff of the House Judiciary Committee.
So how much do you know about the role that you or other constitutional scholars might play or could play in what comes next in the Senate?
Well, at present, the only people who aren't senators who are going to be participating in the trial in the Senate are the seven House managers who officially walked over to the Senate today, and those lawyers whom President Trump chooses to defend him. That could change midway through the trial, but until then, all the Senate has determined thus far is that in the first instance, there will be questions. There will be opening statements by both sides. There will be questions submitted in writing by the senators to both sides. And that's all we have so far.
And
there
they
may
haven't
be no
reached,
witnesses called.
They
yeah,
haven't
exactly.
reached out to you for guidance or advice. You haven't heard from impeachment managers who might want constitutional perspective, et cetera.
I haven't been speaking to them in any direct way at all. Traditionally, the House Judiciary Committee staff advises the managers. And I've, of course, been in touch with members of that staff. But I think their job is really pretty clear at this point. You know, their job is to go in front of the Senate and make the case that is already contained in the articles of impeachment. And in doing so, they will draw on the factual evidence that was presented by the very brave witnesses who appeared in some cases, in many cases, directly against the wishes of the president to testify. And they'll also draw, I think, in terms of their legal conclusions, on some of the testimony by the law professors who spoke alongside me.
So let's stay on that for a minute, because a nonpartisan federal watchdog, the Government Accountability Office, reported today that it found that blocking the military aid to Ukraine violated the law. And earlier this week, we learned about these communications between Mayor Rudy Giuliani, who's been serving as the president's personal lawyer, and his associates, looks like they were working to oust U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch, or at least have her under surveillance. It's a little unclear at this point. But it kind of raises this big question, whether new evidence should be admitted to the trial, not whether it's going to be, but whether it should be. What do you think the Constitution would say?
Well, the Constitution gives the sole power to try impeachments to the Senate, in the same way that it gives the sole power to impeach to the House of Representatives. In the House, the House members who made the determination to impeach when they did were doing that on the ground that they had enough evidence to convince them that impeachment was appropriate. They could have kept on going. They could have continued to gather even more evidence. But they made a judgment that they had enough evidence to go forward. And in my view, that was probably the right judgment for them to have made at the time, because
Why?
Evidence may keep on coming in indefinitely. And because continuing this process for too long might well have led it, you know, all the way into the summer and then potentially even into the election season itself. And the whole point of an impeachment process is to supervise and sanction a president who is trying to break the system in order to get reelected, as the House concluded Donald Trump had done.
Well, that's not the only way you might impeach a president, but I think you're saying that's the point of this impeachment.
It is, and it's certainly one of the things that the framers had specifically in mind. They talked about it when they were discussing why it wasn't enough just to have re-election as a sanction for a president, but actually to have impeachment. They said, you know, listen, a scenario where a president tries to distort the system of democracy in order to get re-elected is one where we really need impeachment. And the House judged that that's exactly what Donald Trump had done, that the investigations he was seeking were designed to help him unfairly win in the 2020 presidential election. So if that was the charge, as indeed it was, and if the House believed that, as indeed it did, it wouldn't have made sense to wait until the election for the impeachment to happen, because then you wouldn't have been actually blocking the president from taking those steps. So I think it made sense for them to impeach when they did. If there's more evidence that would be useful, of course, logically speaking, the Senate should be prepared to look at it. We understand that in practice, it may be that there aren't 51 votes to get more evidence introduced. But in principle, it seems pretty obvious that if there's more evidence that could shed light on the events, that there should be witnesses to testify.
So if I'm understanding you, I think what you're saying is maybe in principle they should, but they don't have to, and they get to write the rules themselves and do it the way that they want to do it.
That's exactly right. That's what it means that they have the sole power to try impeachments. That means that 51 senators can decide to run this trial pretty much however they choose, and that includes the question of whether they're going to admit witnesses and thereby admit new evidence. Incidentally, they could, you know, just take notice of the evidence that's out there. They don't have to necessarily allow witnesses in. There aren't strict rules in this kind of a Senate hearing like there would be in a criminal trial where the jurors could only take into account information that was presented directly to them. Here, the senators can be aware of other evidence and other information. And they could look to that if they so chose.
All right. So let's talk about the Chief Justice for a minute. The Constitution requires that the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court preside over the trial. We spoke with David Gergen yesterday. He has advised four presidents, Nixon, Ford, Reagan, and Clinton, two of whom were engaged in impeachment processes. Here is what he said about the Chief Justice, John Roberts.
The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court presiding over these proceedings in robes, John Roberts, a lot of pressure on him. But I think he will come to represent the symbol of the Constitution itself.
That is a lot of pressure on the Chief Justice. Can he do that? Can he essentially embody the Constitution with his robes and presence in the Senate trial?
Well, first of all, I would say Chief Justice Roberts, who's Chief Justice of the United States, not just Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, but Chief Justice of the United States, he's up to the job. He is a fantastic lawyer, and he's someone who spent a lot of his career trying to send a message to the world that the Supreme Court, though it might be ideological, shouldn't be understood as partisan. Now, he might be right or wrong about that, but he's committed to that, and I think he's more than capable of standing up for those principles. But I would just like to add a slightly different perspective there. I mean, I love David Gergen, and I consider him a friend. But my slight difference of opinion with him here is that the senators are also part of the Constitution. They themselves are fulfilling their constitutional duty. They swore an oath to do impartial justice under the Constitution. So if looking at John Roberts reminds him of that, then so much the better. But the Constitution doesn't live in the Supreme Court. That's just one place where the Constitution is operative. It also lives in the House and in the Senate. And so, this impeachment is a constitutional process. We really have to keep that in mind.
That raises an interesting question, because the context in which David was saying it yesterday had to do with what appears to be hyperpartisanship in this process from beginning to end. And so if we have, for example, a Senate trial with rules that have been solely determined and supported by the majority, how does that obviously, by the letter of the Constitution, it upholds the Constitution, and yet there is a question of legitimacy that can't be escaped. So how do you think about that question?
Well, I think you're right that there is a question of constitutional legitimacy, but it's really important that we remember that the senators are obligated. They have sworn not one but two oaths to support and defend the Constitution in general when they became senators, and again in the concrete before this trial. So if there's a constitutional violation or a failure of fairness, that's on them. That's their responsibility, and it's their fault. I think, you know, it's just really important to keep in mind that our Constitution can't survive in the long run, and our republic can't survive if we just think that it's fine for the president or for Congress or for the Senate to break the rules, because the Supreme Court will come in and save us in the end. The Supreme Court can't save us all the time. And in this instance, the Supreme Court isn't there. Only the Chief Justice is there. All he's doing is presiding, and any ruling that he makes can be overturned by 51 senators. So, you know, in the end, the Constitution lives in us, and our elected representatives have to fulfill the Constitution. And if there's a crisis of legitimacy, it's a crisis that falls back onto us and onto the Republic itself. The Supreme Court, the men in black, and the women in black cannot solve that problem for us.
So let me ask you then, do you have faith that throughout this process, in the participation by our elected representatives and the way the American people hold them accountable, that the core tenets of the Constitution will be at the heart of these proceedings?
I would say that I have hope. When I see the seriousness of the ritual with which this impeachment process is now commencing, I hope that that seriousness of purpose will carry through to the reality of how the trial is conducted. You know, the senators submit questions only in writing, in part by their own choice, so that they won't grandstand, so that they will not push partisanship for the television cameras. That's good. That's a step in the right direction. That pushes the seriousness or purpose of this engagement. Ultimately, when the senators decide how they're going to vote, that is going to be between them and their own conscience. And it's essentially impossible for us to, you know, look inside the soul of another person and know why they're casting the votes that they're casting. So when it comes to that, you know, all we really can do is hope. But I have great hope that the process that we're about to witness will be taken seriously by all participants and will be, you know, faithful to the values of the Constitution.
That's Noah Feldman. He's a law professor at Harvard University who specializes in constitutional studies, and he's one of four legal scholars who testified before the House Judiciary Committee in December. Thanks for being with us. Will you come back again and talk with us more about this?
Gladly.